Hey everybody, welcome to the Cool Daddy Disc Golf Podcast. My name is Bobby, Cool Daddy Slick Breeze. And on this episode, we have Derek Brookard from Truly Unique Disc Golf. Now, what I did was on my wholesale newsletter, which if you want to sell Clash discs in your store, hit me up. Go to CoolDaddyDiscGolf.com and look for the, I think it's called Resources tab. And under there, you can say become a Clash disc dealer and I will get Clash discs in your store. Anyway, I sent out a newsletter to people that are dealers already for me. And I said, hey, I want you to be on my podcast because I want to learn more about the stores that are out there. So Derek had reached out and said he'd love to be on the store, be on the show and share his story about going from not even sure he wanted to be a disc golf dealer to now he has been in business for 12 years. He has his own brick and mortar. He sells online. He's running events and he's doing a fantastic job. But before we go to that, I want you to thank my Patreon supporters. I actually did a behind the scenes little video where I showed people my apartment where it's half my living space, half my Clash disc warehouse. I bought three new shelves. So now I have five-foot shelves with Clash disc inventory ready to go for my online store, for the warehouse part of everything. Anyway, for the Patreon people, I created a little video, kind of do a behind the scenes video for you, for those people. So if you want to see that video, be part of the journey from the behind the scenes, make sure you join my Patreon. I'll put a link of that in the description of this podcast episode. Also, the candy. So when this is released, this podcast episode, it won't be before September 29th, which is the release of the Hardy and Softy candy. Now, it's only coming in one color or two colors, but one color for each plastic. So the Softy is coming in a light blue and the Hardy in a white. And these discs feel amazing. I still got to go out and do my disc review, but I have some of the ambassadors already creating content, unboxing videos. So make sure you go look for them. I know that Eric Oakley, Erica Stinscombe, and James Proctor, Eric Scott Withers, Evan Smith, they all have their candy and they're going to be creating content. So you guys can learn a little bit more about the candy. But the people that already have some of these, the candies in their hands, say they love the disc. So make sure you check that out. CoolDaddyDiscGolf.com will have them on the 29th as well as other Clash disc sellers. I think that's it for my intro. Let's get into the interview. All right, Derek, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you?
Awesome. I'm doing pretty good. I appreciate you filling out the form I sent out via my newsletter so we can get on here and learn a little bit more about you and about Truly Unique Disc Golf. But first, let's kind of talk about the beginning. How did it all start from idea to selling your first disc? And how long ago was that?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. We've been in business for 12 years now, I think.
Oh, wow.
I kind of lose track of time, honestly. It goes by fast.
Yeah. So what gave you the idea to say, hey, I want to start selling discs?
Honestly, it was a very weird situation. I had no intention of ever being a disc golf dealer. I was probably much like a lot of new players in the game, spending way more on disc golf than I probably should have. Somewhere back, gosh, I don't remember what year we started it, but I made a trip down to GBO and had spent like something like $2,000 in the retail store at GBO. And obviously back then, you know, Jeremy was really just getting Dynamic off the ground.
Yeah.
As a manufacturer, at least. And he came out and took a picture with me and gave me a free towel or something along those lines. And one of the workers there had recognized my name from placing just tons of online orders and said, hey, you know, have you ever considered being a dealer? And I was like, no, never even crossed my mind. I don't really sell the stuff. I just buy it, you know? And he says, well, you should consider it. At that time, I think all it took to be a dealer was like a $250 minimum order or something. And I was like, yeah, I'll keep it in mind, you know, probably not something I'm too interested in. Well, then coincidentally, about probably 6 weeks later, I didn't have a job. So my wife and I had for a long time helped my mom run a childcare facility. And she had got to the point where she was low on kids, and she's like, look, I can't afford to pay you both. One of you's going to have to probably look for something else. And childcare bounces back pretty quickly. So I was like, maybe I'll try selling some discs temporarily. And so I spent, I think it was Labor Day. I took a trip down to Emporia, checked out the warehouse. I went down there telling my wife, hey, I'm going to spend this minimum $250 and come back and see if I can, you know, basically double it and at least, you know, supplement our income for the week. Well, that $250 ended up being $1,200 I spent, and I came back and I thought she was going to murder me because we didn't really have $1,200 to be spending. So I went straight to Facebook, went straight to work that same night, you know, took photos of everything I brought back and stuff. And within 24 hours, I was completely sold out of product.
That's awesome.
So I was like, well, that made a, you know, that made that week's income, you know, fine. And then so a week later, I went back down there, walked into the warehouse again. And Kyle Fritz at the time was the warehouse manager. And he looked at me, he goes, you're back? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, no way you're out of that already. I was like, no, I'm completely out of everything. So I went down and I spent another $1,000 or so, and I did it again and came back and the same thing happened. And from there it kind of turned into, maybe we're onto something here, you know? And so every week for, I mean, gosh, you probably remember for,
yeah, I remember
for years, I would come down to Emporia and handpick orders for people and pull some cool gems and throw them up on Facebook. And for about 8 years, that was how I operated my business. It was mainly social media based.
That's crazy. Yeah, I remember actually, I specifically remember being in board meetings and someone brought up, it was like, who's this guy that keeps coming up and should we let him come to the warehouse and do that? Is that really fair? And we were like, you know, if he wants to do it, let him do it. He's selling our discs. So let him do it. So
Jeremy, yeah, I remember that specifically. You know, I started in my basement and look where I am now. You know, if the guy wants to work that hard and do it, then we're going to let him do it.
Yeah. I thought that was cool.
And here we are years later. COVID showed up, you know, which kind of all of a sudden went from weekly trips to the warehouse to the warehouse is closed. You can't come in.
Yeah.
And I went to my wife one day and I was like, you know, it's sink or swim time. You know, we're either going to have to go brick and mortar or disc golf, you know, probably done for us for at least for, you know, a while, because nobody knew what you could do with COVID going on.
Yeah.
Luckily we live in an area where COVID was never, it never really shut down non-essential businesses in my county. So we were lucky enough to be able to stay open through COVID. So we opened the doors right in the middle of it, November of 2020. And yeah, so.
Wow. So take me to, so let's go step back still a little bit. So you started out where you would, and I remember you would make posts like, hey guys, I'm going to go to the, and I'm paraphrasing obviously, but you'd say something similar to, I'm going to the warehouse. You wanted specifics, right? Like people would say, oh, grab me some of these.
Yeah. Is there anything specific you're looking for? And some people would make what I would call just insanely crazy requests. Like, oh, I'm looking for a red pure with a flag stamp and it has to be 172 grams. Or something like that. And you'd be like, okay, that's like a needle in a haystack probably. But occasionally you got lucky, you know, and you'd hit those. But if not, you know, you might be digging through the pures looking for that red pure with the flag stamp and you'd see one that was red with white swirls running through it or something. And
yeah,
I was like, well, that one's not going to work, but this one's going to sell for sure. But a lot of times the requests were simple, you know, hey, I'm looking for a white lucid verdict stamp color. Doesn't matter. It's just got to be a 177 or above, you know, or something like that. And so I would go down and that's what I would try to find. And when I came back, I would message directly because I, you know, basically already had a customer waiting for it. So I would say maybe 30% of what I brought back every week was already sold to people that had requested, you know, specifics. And the other 70% was stuff I thought was cool enough to take a shot at. And at that time, of course, the market was a lot less saturated than it is now. So
Yeah. And we'll get into that a little bit later because I'm curious how that is, because there's so many different brands and so many, seems like, I mean, it's wonderful that it's easy enough just to open a Shopify account or a Wix account and start selling online. But I wonder how that affects everybody, like as yourself, that's been around for a while. But so how did you figure out, how did you scale? How did you know when, like, okay, I mean, obviously yes, it makes sense to say, okay, I'm selling more, so I buy more. But how did you approach that? How did you say, okay, I'm going to buy a little more products, a little more inventories in anticipation of being able to sell more? How did you make those types of decisions to scale up?
Well, I mean, the number of people making requests every week slowly grew on its own. You know, we started a Facebook group that was kind of its own group that was just meant for truly unique business stuff. You know, it wasn't a group where anybody and everybody could post, but anybody could comment. So, you know, if we made a post, obviously, as that group grew, you know, you'd go from 30 people requesting this one week to next, you know, then over the course of months, now you had 50 people requesting, and then you had maybe 75 people requesting. And that grew. And as that grew, obviously, that meant we were pulling more product from that standpoint. But it also meant we had more viewers for our product every week. And as we had more viewers, we knew we had to have more product. And so that's kind of how, you know, how we scaled there. We just slowly, you know, with the numbers, pulled more product. And I mean, in the beginning of, obviously it's a risk, you know, you're like, okay, I'm going to try an extra $300 or $400 of product this week and see what happens. And it, you know, like anything, it would slow down. It would get to the point where it wasn't selling out every week. And instead of, I mean, being straightforward, I mean, for the first couple years, I felt like I really only had to work 24 to 36 hours a week. You know, it was 24 hours basically of listing and getting the product out there and pulling the orders and stuff. And then another 12 hours of, you know, payments trickling in and shipping those out. And then whatever else we did throughout the week was just a bonus. So we would spend time like, I went to school for studio art. So I had some background in Photoshop and things like that. So we would spend time like kind of toying with our logo and putting art around it and coming out with cool stamps and, you know, maybe running some cool Dymaxes or cool hot stamps or things like that, just to have something to do in the off time. And then we built some followers for that, you know, people that really wanted to collect it and grab it. I think some of that is gone these days. I mean, the market's changed and I think some of the collectors that we had back then are gone. But that was kind of how we, you know, how we filled that time. Well, then as the customer base grew and it, you know, it took a little longer to sell out, obviously, then I started to have to work a couple more days a week and, focus a little less on the artwork and a little more on just sales.
Yeah.
And then like anything, you know, if something's going good and working, other people see that. And so other people would start to try to do the same thing. So then now you're building, you know, competitors for what you're doing.
So speaking of the logo, if people are unfamiliar, I'll post a picture when I'm maybe in the show notes. I think I can do that on Spotify and other places. But it's actually it's called Truly Unique, but it's actually pretty cool logo where you're basically kind of have a guy in kind of a hero warrior stance with his arms spread out. And then he's got the dynamic disc crown as his crown. And then the Latitude 64 swoosh or whatever you want to call it. I can't remember what they officially call that for his chest emblem, almost like a Superman S, but rather the Latitude 64 little E. And then below that, you've got the West Side Discs, the 5-star kind of general army looking logo. And then it's got wings and chains around it that are from the West Side Discs. I think that's how they incorporated into right. The little chain. And I'm going to be honest with you. And I don't know if you ever knew this, but back when you first made it, I told them, don't let them do this because I was the marketing guy at the beginning. And I was like, we have to protect our brand. We have to protect our logos. And I didn't like that you took our logos and modified them like that. And so, did you ever know that?
I did not know that.
Yes. And so I was opposed. I was like, no, you can't let him do this. And Jeremy's like, why? Why can't he do that? And other people, and it was like, and again, in a board meeting, we're like, should we let him do this? Should we let, we shouldn't let him do this. And finally they convinced me. It's like, it, he's building the brands. He's building the, his own company. He's putting in the work. And I was like, okay, that's fine. That's cool. Yeah. And then now, I mean, like, look at it now. Yes, it's a really cool logo and I think it's cool. But at first I did not like that you made that logo.
So it's a weird thing. So we started, when we started, we had no name for the business. Obviously, you know, this wasn't planned. It wasn't, you know, and you sit there and you think about it and everybody comes up with some name, you know, I could have called it Brooker's Discs or whatever, you know, some crazy name. And I had come up with this logo at one point that was like an eagle carrying a disc or something along those lines. I don't even remember honestly exactly what it looked like, but I never wanted to launch the logo. I was like, and I don't want to launch anything until I'm sure, you know, until I'm really sure this is what I want. And so I didn't do much with it. And then as we started, you know, pulling these unique discs from the warehouse and things like that, you know, people would just make comments to me like, man, that's a really unique disc, or that's a truly unique disc, you know, or things like that. And one day I'm just laying there and all of a sudden it kind of clicks. I'm like, that is a really good name for what we're doing. It's a really good name for our company. So, at that point, like I said, I had no idea what the logo was going to be. All I knew at that point was, hey, I like this name, Truly Unique, and I'm only carrying Trilogy products, you know? And so, you know, we had somewhat built a relationship with the guys down there. And, so I reached out to Les White one day. And I said, hey, I have this vision of what this is going to look like. And I kind of described it to him. And I'll be honest, it's not really what he came up with. It's kind of the same ideas, but not quite, like, not what I had in my mind, you know, not what I closed my eyes and saw. But he sent it back and I was like, no, this is, I like this. I like this a lot, you know? So I'm not sure if everybody knows that, but the logo was designed by Les White. Probably not to, I'm probably giving a little more detail than I need to, but at that time, Les was still kind of growing in this game as well as an artist. I mean, he was known, but not like he is now. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, you know, I need a logo that's going to work with my business. This is what, you know, what my vision is, whatever. And I said, just let me know what you need for it. But just, you know, realize that I'll have the rights to use this, you know, for as long as I have a business. And he said $100. And I was like, okay. Yeah. I mean, and at the time, I mean, $100 at the time actually seemed, you know, reasonable to me. And I also, $100 was a lot of money to me at that time.
Yeah.
And so we reached out. Anyway, long story short, we got the logo and we sent Les some stuff with the logo on it and stuff. And yeah, I think it was about a year later, he reached out and he goes, I really should have taken royalties on that for life. And I was like, yeah, I can see where you're going with that. But yeah, then the agreement we kind of made with Jeremy and David and Thomas and all them was, you know, we're a Trilogy dealer who's really pushing to grow the Trilogy brand. This is all we're carrying, blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm sure like you said, there was plenty of meetings about it, but they came back and they said, yeah, okay, we're going to let you use this. Well, then here we are years later. And, you know, obviously as we grew, we knew we had to develop a second logo as well, you know, because I can't take, we call him the Trilogy guy. So I can't take the Trilogy guy and put him on a Clash disc. Right. So,
right.
So we developed what we call our letter logo. It's a TU letter logo that we use for most other brands and things of that nature.
So back to the opening of the store. So you decided at some point you're going to need a brick and mortar. Was that just because it was kind of overrunning your house or you just needed a place for people to come in and look at discs?
It was overrunning my house. That is definitely a true statement. That actually had less to do with it than COVID did, as I said. With COVID, it was kind of, we couldn't go to the warehouse, but we knew that disc golf was growing at a fast pace. And we're like, look, there's a market for it. If we're ever going to try to open a store, now is probably the time. Cause as I said, our county never shut down. However, we knew that was a risk. So the building we leased, has a drive up window, with the thought process at the time that, hey, if we have to go online based or something like that only, they can just drive up to the window and we hand them out the discs and we don't ever have to have that full contact. And locals can continue to disc golf and we can continue to grow and, you know, things of that nature. We never to this day have had to open that drive up window. Which is cool, but we knew that was going to be a risk. So when we decided to open the brick and mortar store, that's when we decided, look, we have to have a website as well. You know, we have to be able to, you know, move discs no matter what happens. And so we invested quite a bit. We didn't go with like a Shopify or anything like that. We invested quite a bit in a full blown website. We had it fully developed from the ground up. And that's kind of where we are now with that. I'm kind of self-teach myself some of the back end stuff. I mean, they gave us the basic rundown of how it works. And so every day I'm learning something new still on the website, but
so yeah. Back to kind of the scaling up, like even with the brick and mortar and even with the, building an online website store, were you just like, you know what, this just seems like the natural next thing to do, so we're just going to jump in and do it?
Well, I mean, being the way we operated for so long, we had built some pretty decent capital to work with if we needed to.
Yeah.
So we could afford to invest. And we took, so let me back up just a hair. So it was probably about 2 years before COVID. I knew I wanted to be able to start investing more each week in product, but couldn't necessarily afford to 100% do that with what I had. And so I reached out to a gentleman who I had done quite a bit of disc golf business with, and I asked him if he ever had any interest in being part of a company or anything like that. At that point, he actually was interested. And so I think a lot of people probably don't realize, because he works mainly on the back end. He handles, you know, the books and things of that nature. But we partnered up in, I can't even remember what year it was. I want to say like 2018, with a gentleman named John Hornberger from Waxhaw, North Carolina. And so he actually opened the first Truly Unique store, which was, it was by appointment only type of thing, because he had another job. And he tried to open a small store in the Waxhaw area, and it just really didn't work, mainly because it didn't have regular store hours and there was no way to just constantly keep traffic flowing in there. So at that point, you know, when we decided we were going to launch out here, he packed up everything he had in a trailer and drove it all out to Kansas City. And that kind of helped get us off the ground. I mean, because before I didn't carry a ton of baskets and carts and bags and things of that nature, mainly because when you're operating out of your house and you're shipping only, those items aren't the most profitable items by any means. So that's kind of how, you know, like I said, how we got to this point. As far as, you know, the store, it was, we had some capital and we're like I said, it was kind of, hey, we're either doing this or we're not doing this, because I couldn't go hand pick. So the whole business model I had built was kind of gone, you know. COVID kind of said, nope, yeah, that business model's not working anymore. And we had no idea at that time how long it was going to be. I mean, I made multiple phone calls and emails to the warehouse going, hey, are we back yet? Are we back yet? They're like, nope, still not open yet. And then it slowly got to where, you know, you could go back down there. But at that point, we had already gone this direction and launched. And so, it was kind of an abrupt end to weekly trips and stuff.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit. Like what, how hard of a decision, or because, you know, you were truly unique, which was a lot of people, at least my understanding when I saw it was more of like, you go handpicked from the warehouse and you're selling only the Trilogy brand. And then of course your logo, your, that you had just the Trilogy logos. How did you, was it a hard decision to say, okay, we're going to start selling other brands, or how did that go?
Well, so it was a very hard decision for multiple reasons. I mean, first of all, the customer base I had built over all these years were Trilogy followers, right? I didn't have big Innova followers and Discraft followers and MVP followers and things of that nature. So that it was scary for sure, you know, because now I'm, you know, anything I invest in, at least from an online base, you know, I don't know if I have customers that are looking to come buy that stuff from me. The other side of that is, of course, this relationship that we had built with Dynamic Discs over the course of all these years, you know, is now changing. I think the good thing for us at that point was they were also changing, right? So they were changing, they were evolving. And so I do think that part made it a little easier. But then, you know, we knew that our logo was based around that and, you know, multiple things like that. So yeah, it was definitely a scary choice. When we decided to do the store, you know, I felt like one of the things I had to do to continue to be truly unique was, you know, I had to be different than other stores. And so the question kind of became, how can I be different? And so in order for me to continue to, you know, to be different and stand out, I was like, I'm going to look into carrying some of the people that nobody else carries. You know, I want to stand out. I want to be different and offer things that you just can't grab anywhere else. And so at that point we decided, you know, we're going to go all in, and, you know, we're going to be the guys carrying every brand, you know, that is not every brand, but a huge amount of the brands that are coming to market, you know?
I'm looking on there. You've got like some, unique brands that you don't see at every disc golf store. I think that's a great, great approach.
Rough approach because it's, you know, with that many brands comes multiple investments, right? I mean, one thing we run into today is with that many brands, there's something dropping pretty much every single day, you know? And at some point you get to the point where you're like, financially, you have to, you know, you have to tread lightly in that area. So my business partner just walked in and he's giving me a look for saying that. He's like, yeah, you do. You gotta tread lightly in that area.
Is he telling you to tread more lightly? Yeah. You gotta tread lighter. How do you work with these brands? How do you help people discover these brands that no one's heard much of?
So smaller brands, that can be difficult for sure. You know, a lot of times I will, you know, start with a small batch, obviously. You know, you don't want to go crazy and go all in on something you're not sure about. And then I try to get people to test them out, test the product. Sometimes I'll run small events. There's a company called Alpha Discs, and they make a disc called the Apollo. We were kind of dabbling in whether or not we wanted to carry Alpha Discs in the store. So I found that just putting it on the shelf, you know, the average customer is not going to walk in and just grab something they don't know. And they may not want to take a chance on it. So we came up with this creative event that was based around like 36 people. And we called it Rocky versus Apollo. And so we took like Innova's Rock and we said, hey, we're going to get some Kansas City pros to come out and throw just the Rock, you know, we know these guys have been throwing the rock for years. They're, you know, they understand the way it flies. And then we took some amateurs and said, hey, you guys can build a 3-man team, and we're going to give you the Apollo, this new disc from Alpha Discs. We, like I said, we came up with the creative name Rocky versus Apollo. And so it was a 3-man team versus one pro. But it forced them to go out and test the disc, and learn the disc and decide if this disc is something that, you know, that they're interested in. And it's a small market of people, obviously, that are testing it. But with anything, word of mouth travels fast. If a disc is good, people are going to start to hear about that. From those people, you know, some of those people loved it, some didn't. And it kind of helped get the name out there. And now we carry the disc, and there's people that come in and looking for the disc and buying the disc. And so we try to do creative things like that.
So it almost seems like, though, like the way I'm hearing it, I guess, is that some of the marketing is on you, but I would imagine as the store owner, you would like the brand or the manufacturer to take on some of the marketing as well.
Absolutely, because, I mean, you can imagine, especially with, I mean, I'm looking on my website here as I'm talking to you, and, you know, we've got Daredevil, for example, which is a Canadian-based company that I don't think a lot of people really know about. Destroyer, Divergent, Doomsday, which is a really, you know, kind of unique company. They have some very unique, overstable, interesting discs. They've got a 7-speed disc they've come out with that's like oversized, more like the size of a condor almost. And then you got like Elevation, who is, you know, they've got that floppy line, the real flexible, floppy plastic. And so things like this, yeah, I mean, you need these companies to market themselves well, obviously, or so that people at least have interest in looking for them, you know. Otherwise, they just come in and, you know, you have to try to market it to your customers. And when you have that many brands like that, marketing all that is very difficult. Some things I feel kind of market themselves to an extent, you know, like the floppy disk, people pick them up. They're like, oh, wow, this is weird. You know, like I have to try this, you know? And so it kind of markets itself, versus like, you know, if you're just a company coming out with a new disk and it's just your everyday driver, that's not going to market itself, you know? You know, and then, I mean, I know you're working closely with Clash, so I'll use Clash as an example. You know, they've got unique creative names with their food line and things of that nature. Some of that obviously helps, you know. But yeah, marketing that many brands is difficult. So, I mean, I do think that falls a lot back on the manufacturer or the company that's producing the product to make sure that people want to have interest in their product.
Yeah. And that was always kind of my thought process at Dynamic Disc and now at Clash Disc, is that we've got to give people a reason to come into these stores. And then when they, you know, they see a Clash Disc commercial on Disc Golf Pro Tour, I mean, Nico, for good or bad, he was good for the brand as far as brand awareness, as far as people knowing, hearing the word Clash Disc. And so that when they walk into a, you know, truly unique store and they see Clash, they're like, oh yeah, I've already heard about it 3 or 4 times. Now I want to touch it and feel it. Oh gosh, it feels good. Right. And now I want to give it a try or something like that. So yeah, that's interesting with the,
And I think, brand. I mean, Clash is a great example. You know, their commercials catch your eye. You know, their commercials are funny. They're fun to watch. They catch your eye. And that's going to make somebody come in and say, hey, do you carry Clash? You know? And like you said, they're going to want to try it. And then at that point, now that they're trying it, that's when the product has to start speaking for itself. You know, the product has to be good. Obviously, if they're trying it and the product's, you know, got razor sharp edges and terrible flashing and things of that nature, then now you've lost them, you know. But if it's a good product, then, you know, your goal is to get them to touch it and feel it and try it. And now they're going to want to try the next disc and the next disc, you know. And that can be the difficult part, because I think, much like, you were saying earlier, you know, anybody can open a Shopify account and start, you know, try to become a dealer. I'm not saying just anybody can become a disc golf manufacturer, but some of these companies I do feel rush into it a little quickly. They don't have it perfected. They don't have the plastic really figured out or the feel really figured out. And I think if you dive in too quickly, you know, and it doesn't feel good and they don't like it, it's hard to get them back, you know? So
yeah,
that definitely is an issue.
So give me one or two of like the biggest lessons you've learned that turned into success, and then a lesson maybe that turned into a failure, but in a sense you just learned a lesson.
Well, that's a tough question.
Maybe some recently.
So, man, that's one you kind of got to put thought into.
Yeah.
I would say from the failure side, you know, maybe carrying so many brands could come off as a failure. I'm not saying I would undo it. I just think the investment it takes is may outweigh the reward that you get.
Gotcha.
And I think that's probably a lesson that a lot of other people either learned or just weren't willing to take the risk on. And so they've never quite had to have that failure in that, you know, from that aspect, I guess. Because realistically, there's not a lot of us throughout the country that are carrying this many brands, you know?
Yeah.
But on the other side of that same token, I mean, that one's a success and a failure at the same time. Like sometimes it feels like a failure and sometimes it feels like a success, because I do have people that walk in my store every day and they come here because they know that I'm going to have everything versus, you know, if they were to go to another store in Kansas City, you know, they know that their options are limited. That's definitely part of it. I would say another, I don't know. I struggle to call it a failure, but if I could change it, I would. I feel like COVID, starting the brick and mortar store kind of caused us to, I don't want to say lose sight, but lose our roots to an extent. You know, what grew us to be here was an online-based social media presence and a social media marketing and things of that nature. And due to, you know, limited staffing and stuff like that, when you open a brick and mortar, that takes a lot of time. It also, with that comes more tournaments and things of that. It's more boots on the ground, and that means you have less time for the things you did before. So I feel like to an extent, some of the original customer base has moved on because they don't feel like we're still there like we were. And obviously we are. It's just, it now takes a little more connection. It takes them reaching out and asking us for something versus us just posting it on our page every single day or things of that nature. So I definitely think I wish that transition had been smoother. I wish there was a way to have both. And I think there probably would have been, you know, had the manpower been there at the time, but that transition, like I said, I have a partner, like I said, that works behind the scenes and stuff, but he's not boots on the ground every day because he has a full-time job, and I'm boots on the ground here, but, you know, only one person. And then, you know, when we did open the store, my wife came on. She pretty much runs the front side of the store because somebody has to load the website, you know, and somebody has to bring in the new product and, you know, and things of that nature. Somebody has to place the orders. And then on top of that, of course, you know, somebody has to to build the events. Somebody has to run the events, you know? And so there's just, you know, with two of us in here, there's only so much that we can do and, you know, the amount of time that we have. And, you know, I continue to still, business doesn't change anything. You know, if you're a father of four, you're still a father of four, you know, that doesn't change. And so, and I was a father of four who was very, very active in my kids' lives and always available. And so, yeah, so things kind of change a little bit. And so from my standpoint, I look at that and I do feel like somewhat of a failure in that I wasn't able to perfectly manage that transition to where everybody stayed happy. I wish more people understood, you know, what happened there and how it happened so that they didn't. I do think some people take it personal, you know, like, hey, you forgot where you came from. You forgot who got you here. The reality is without those customers, we aren't here, you know? So,
yeah. Well, I think with anything, any business, you have to kind of, there's always going to be change and there's always going to be ebbs and flows, things that go good and things that don't go good, but you're still here. You're still trying to succeed and build a business.
I think change is just not something people like.
I think there are lessons learned.
Yeah.
No, definitely. People do not like change at all.
And so some people adapt to what the change is, you know, like, there's people that have no issue when a new release comes out from us, just jumping on our website and grabbing it and looking at their choices. There's other people that they still want to see it right there in front of them on social media, or they're just going to find someplace else to grab it, you know? It's tough, you know, I mean, because like I said, people just don't like change, you know? So,
yeah. Well, so what do you have going on now? What's the latest happening for Truly Unique as far as new ventures or anything like that?
So new for us, obviously, you know, as the store grew, like I said, we grew our tournaments. So I was a guy who really ran one or two very solid tournaments a year, and that was where I wanted to be. I didn't want to have a full schedule of tournaments all the time. I enjoy being able to spend time with my kids on the weekend and things like that. That a lot of that changed with the store, unfortunately, but now our weekends, you know, we're running 15 to 20 tournaments a year. Some big, some small. I mean, we run things as big as Rock the Lake, which you're familiar with because you guys were a sponsor, you know, which is 224 players and over 40 brands sponsoring it, and it's massive. It raises tons of money for advancement in disc golf in our community. And then we run things as small as pop-up type events like the Rocky versus Apollo I mentioned, or things like that, you know, that host just, you know, 24 to 36 people. We just launched our very first junior league, which I'm very proud of. So we run league every week with just, it's just kids ages 8 to 14 that come out. Mm. And we ran clinics in the spring to teach them disc golf, and then we run leagues in the fall so that they can come out and put those skills to use against other kids of their, you know, of their age range. It's treated much like any recreational program would be for baseball or soccer or anything else, you know. They come out every week and they compete against each other. And then obviously we give them some store payout to the store and things of that nature.
Would you say these events in itself are profitable, or are they more of marketing in the sense they keep the disc golf community busy and disc golf on their mind? And they, of course, think of you and your store when it comes
to disc golf. The average tournament director nowadays, tournaments can be profitable. Ours are not. We are definitely more on the marketing side. I always say I don't like to run tournaments. I like to run events. The difference to me is, you know, you can have your average flex start where you go out and you throw your round and get your rating and you move on. Or you can have events where they come out and, you know, the player pack wows them before they even get there. Or, you know, before they even get started. And so they, to an extent, I feel like if you do it right, they can never walk away feeling like they lost. You know, one of our big ones that we do is Chill at the Hill, and we offer like catered lunch in between. So they come off the course, they get their lunch, then, you know, and they get their time to relax, and then they go out there and they put their second round in. The player pack's always worth more than they paid to even get in. Things of that nature. I'm more a believer, like I said, in putting on a good event than putting on a tournament. I think anybody can put on a tournament, but it takes a lot more to put on an event. That there's good and bad to that. I mean, obviously events take a lot of work. They take a lot of time. And like I said, you're not going to be as profitable with an event. As a matter of fact, sometimes you lose on an event. You just hope that it builds your customer base and your their appreciation for what you're doing for disc golf, and it brings them back.
That's awesome. I think that's interesting. No, that makes a lot of sense though, as far as the marketing angle, as far as keeping people busy, people keep them your store.
Well, and I think, so it, I think
that's great. And I love the junior league thing too. I think that's really cool to get the young.
I think my thought process behind that, is that at the end of the day, especially nowadays, there's so many tournaments, and I have people tell me all the time, they're like, look, my wife's only going to let me play one a month. There's a tournament every single weekend. Sometimes there's two. What's going to make them choose mine over another one, you know? And I think that's where, you know, if you're giving them an experience that they're not going to forget, at least not for a while, it makes the choice for them pretty easy. I probably do something a little different than most tournament directors. And I don't have a lot of fear in doing so. My tournament packages, my player packs are pre-purchased. Like before I even launch my event, if I'm putting on a 90 person event, I have 90 player packs ready to go. And I don't sit around and fear that I'm not going to fill and I'm going to get stuck with, you know, 20 player packs. And I think that's a big problem within disc golf is the fear of getting stuck with stuff. So, and I'm not going to tell you there's not some events. There's a few events that aren't to that scale for us yet. And so we do have that, you know, that risk and that fear. But then there's others that, you know, you just don't have that issue. You don't, you know, if it's a good enough event, you know, it's going to fill. Because the number of disc golfers is out there. You know, there's plenty of people. It's just, you've got to give them a reason to choose what you're doing over something else. So.
I like it. All right, Derek, well, I'll let you get back to your day. I appreciate you taking the time out of your day today to let us learn a little bit more about Truly Unique. I think it's a great story, and I love how you started out not even sure that you wanted to be a disc golf dealer, and now look at you. You've got a store and an online store, and you're doing fantastic. I think that's awesome. Where can people find... I know they can go to the website.
It's tudiscgolf.com.
tudiscgolf.com. And then where else can they find you
online? I mean, we do have an eBay store. Obviously, we have a Facebook group. It's called Truly Unique Disc Golf. In parentheses, it says Trilogy and More. Used to just be Trilogy, obviously. But now it's Trilogy and More. Then we have a business page. I will be honest, I am not the best social media guy when it comes to like Instagram and all that stuff. We have it, but it's one of those things that you have to have a lot of time and constantly be on it. And my time is pulled in so many other directions that I don't keep up with it like I should. And then obviously you can find us in our brick and mortar store in Belton, Missouri too. So if you're traveling to the area or coming into Kansas City to play, I like to believe we're worth, you know, the 20-minute drive out of the way to come check out the store. So
I love it. All right. Thank you so much, Derek. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much again to Derek for being on the show. That was interesting. I didn't know that he didn't have a job when he started doing it. I remember him coming into the warehouse at Dynamic Discs and picking stuff. I thought that was a cool idea, but I didn't realize it was like, I have no job, so now I'm going to try this thing out. So that's pretty cool. All right, guys, remember, September 29th, the Clash Disc Candy Putter in Hardy and Softy comes out. You can find those at CoolDaddyDiscGolf.com.
If you are a store owner, a disc golf store owner, or you know a disc golf store owner, let them have them reach out to me. DM me on Instagram or send me an email, bobby@clashdiscs.com, and we will work to get Clash Discs in your store. Or if you need, I've got plenty of candies ready to send out to you so you can have them in your store so you can have your customers come in and buy those. Patreon supporters, thank you again so much. Appreciate that. I'm going to do more behind the scenes Patreon stuff. So appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. We'll see you on the next episode.